said, Jerry, if you're going to be doing some speaking, here's a hint. 3 points in a poem. That's it. When I preach, 3 points in a poem. Yeah. So I've kind of been following that. But I want to share three signs, three benchmarks that Lolly and I have learned and have seen on our journey. For some of you ladies, these signs may sound familiar because we're on the same journey, and she talked about them last night, some of them. But I have found these signs to be helpful because they've been encouragement to me. They've given me direction. They've given me some hope as I've been going on my journey. And the journey has been hard, but it seemed like God has always placed a sign where I needed it. Long before video games and DVD players and cars and things like that, going on long trips used to be a pretty difficult thing for family. I mean, I can remember riding with my parents, and we used to play fun games like counting the number of cows you see on the road, you know, and if you go past the cemetery, you lost all, you got to start all back number one, you know. We played a lot of fun games like that. Didn't have, you know, the iTouch and iPad and iPod and watch the Incredibles on the DVD player sitting up in front of the back seat. You know, didn't do that. Couldn't do that. But we did have other ways of entertainment for us. They used to advertise a lot. So we used to look at billboards and things. And there were some really unique advertising. Burma Shave used to do some real good advertising. You'd be riding along and they'd have a little sign. And then you'd ride about another mile later, there'd be another sign. And one after another, they would be sharing a message with you. One of them was, you'd be riding along and it says, within this veil, I wrote it down here, of toil and sin. You go to the next one, to ride along another mile, and you see another sign. Your head grows bald, but not your chin. And then the last sign says Burma Shave, you know. Another one was, the whale put Jonah. Next sign, down the hatch. Third sign, but coughed him up because he scratched. Burma Shave. Yeah. I thought that was just, you know, I needed signs like that to help me on my journey. And God has placed some signs. Because like I said, I had a vision. I thought I knew where I was going. I had a great plan. The thing was, though, it didn't quite turn out like I thought it was going to be. But one of the first signs that I learned that may be of help to you as you are on your journey is I'm going to plant this sign, and it's one that I keep in my journey, on my trail, on my walk with Christ now. Caution, Gary. In life, things aren't always the way they seem. In life, things aren't always the way they seem. Like I said, I thought I had a great plan. I was going to become a Green Beret. I was going to become a medic. I was going to go to Vietnam. And at 24 years old, I had accomplished all that. I had done that. I had gone through special forces training. I had gone through medical training. I was a Green Beret medic. I was living in Vietnam, which is a beautiful, beautiful country. I was in charge of the health of 2,300 people in our village. It was great. The responsibility, the excitement, it was just beautiful. People now pay thousands of dollars to go on vacation to Vietnam. I was getting paid to be there. They paid me $500 a month, but I was in Vietnam where people pay thousands of dollars now to go on vacation. You know, except for the snakes and the tigers and the ambushes and things like that. It was in a bad place. Yeah. But it was like my Shangri-La. I had achieved my dream. I had arrived at my goal. But you see, there was something was always used to bother me, because in our team house we had a sign that said, to really live, you must almost die. To those that fight for it, life has a meaning the protected will never know. And they used to puzzle me because I said, what's that mean, to really live? I'm living. I can't think of anything more in my life that I would really want. I've got everything I've ever dreamed of. I've achieved my vision. I've accomplished everything that I've set before me. But that says, to really live, I got to die. What's that mean? Well, on April 1st, 1970, I found out what that meant. I found out that life isn't always as it seems, because my bubble burst. We were surrounded by three regiments of North Vietnamese, And as I told the first adult class, that translates into about 10,000 North Vietnamese. For 30 days, we were surrounded. For 6 hours on the morning of April 1st, we just suffered artillery and rockets bombardment for 6 hours and leveled everything above ground. And then the human wave attacks started. You know what it's like to see 10,000 people come running at you with not good thoughts on their mind? It's scary. My bubble burst. Life is not what it seems. You see, I made a big mistake. I didn't realize that life is not always as it seems. I had forgotten that this Shangri-La where I was living was in the middle of a war. There was a war going on. And I forgot all about that because I had just become so in love with that place and the people that I was with. And I forgot that there was a war out there, that there were 10,000 people that wanted to kill me. That was scary. John Eldridge is a Christian writer. He wrote a book, and in their book there was a quote that he had which really spoke to me almost as much as that sign did that said, "To really live, you must almost die. To those that fight for it, life has a meaning. The protective will never know." That's one of those things when you see it, it's embedded in your heart and in your mind. Well, Eldridge had a quote, too, in one of his books. He said that until we as Christians come to terms with the fact that we are living our lives in the context of war, we are going to misunderstand or misinterpret 90% of what happens to us in our Christian life. Until we come to terms with the fact that we are living in war, we're going to misinterpret and misunderstand. We are going to miss 90% of what happens to us in life because we are living under the assumption that things in life are the way they are. But caution, things in life are not as they seem. There's a war going on. A terrible war. And Ephesians 6 tells us that that war is not against flesh and blood. Ephesians 6 tells us that in that war we need the whole armor of God, from the shield of faith to the sword of the Spirit, to be able to battle in that war, because our enemy is Satan. 2 Corinthians 10 tells us that war takes place in our imaginations and in our heart and in our mind. And I really believe, because my war experience has taught me, that all battles, whether they're spiritual or physical, all battles are fought and they're won and they're lost here and here. I fought some battles in Vietnam, but those battles were won or lost, first of all, here and here. When somebody calls medic, you run. Hopefully to them, not away from them. And you have to first of all fight the battle here and here. This is my job. This is my training. He's expecting me to be there. He needs my help. In spite of the fear, I overcome that and I go. Battles are fought, won or lost, and here and here. That's where you're in the imaginations of your heart. And that's why 2 Corinthians tells us to bring into captivity every thought and all the imaginations of our heart. Bring it into the mind of Christ. Because the battles are so important. That's why Paul told the Philippians to let this mind be in you, which was in Christ Jesus. Because the battles are fought in your mind. So have the mind of Christ. Proverbs tells us in Proverbs 4 to keep your heart with all diligence, because out of it are the issues of life. Battles for life are fought in your heart and in your mind. And we need to be training, because, and how's your training going? You know? Because the tactics of spiritual warfare are the same as the tactics for ground and military warfare. Satan uses the same things. Diversions. He'd love to get you at the Marriott sign rather than the Marriott. Thinking you're going the right way. The only thing is when you get to the Marriott sign, it'll blow up on you. Have you ever had something you think you were going the right way and all of a sudden it blew up on you? Diversions, ambushes, booby traps. Sometimes life hits you with a full frontal assault. The tactics are all the same, whether they're used by Satan or by the enemy. But I've learned that what you learn in training works in the battle. If you're training your heart and you're training your mind, if you're letting your mind be the mind of Christ, and if you're guarding your heart with all diligence, you will do well in the battle. If you have the shield of faith, the sword of the Spirit, you will do well in battle. But Satan's a hard enemy, and his tactics are many. His goal, first of all, is to keep us from finding out what life is all about. That's why that first sign is important. In life, things aren't what they seem. Because Satan's goal is to keep you from finding out what life is really all about. And to do that, he'll try to keep you from finding God. If he can't keep you from finding God, then he will try to keep you from experiencing the life, the fullness of life, the satisfaction, the meaning to life that God has for each of us. That's why God places these benchmarks, these signs, these directions on our journey. Gary, as you're on your journey, remember, in life, things aren't as they seem. I go to my second sign. I'm traveling along because that's helped me. Second sign I come up to says, Gary, in life, what happens in you is more important than what happens to you. What happens in you, Gary, is much more important than what's happening to you in life. Many times when they want to hear my story, people always say, yeah, tell me the war stories. Tell me what it was like. Tell me what it was like to be in the battles. I don't know if it's a guy thing or what, but you know, people just want to hear the war stories. They want to hear what happened to me. And I have to say, that's not important. What happened to me? What's important is what was happening in me. And my greatest battle was not on the battlefield of Vietnam. I was telling the adult class that my greatest battle happened 3 days after April 1st, when I woke up in a hospital bed and I was dying. I had been shot. I got hit in the spine, so I was paralyzed from the waist down. I got shot through the side here, and the bullet came out here. And then I took a gut shot in the stomach here. I had things that were supposed to be inside that were outside, you know, and I woke up and I couldn't walk. I saw all these tubes going in me. I saw the blood up here. I saw fluids. I had tubes everywhere. The worst thing, though, was is that I would pass out. I started going unconscious. And I thought, this is too scary. I don't want to do this. I don't want to have that loss of control. What was happening in me was I was sensing that I didn't have control anymore. And I had passed out a number of times prior to this, back in college, you know, some of my earlier military days, passed out for different reasons. But this was different, because I knew that this passing out had more drastic effects than just a bad hangover. That was the battle that I began to fight, trying to remain conscious. The thing that added to that battle was is that when I became conscious, I'd look around and I would watch other men. There was a guy that was next to me who I recognized. He was a friend from the Australian Mike Force. And I watched him. He was unconscious most of the time. But I watched him and I listened to him as he took his last breath. The thing that remains with me from death is the sounds of death. I watched him die. I watched them place a sheet over his head. And then I would feel myself going away. And I'm saying, is this it? Is this what it's like to die? I don't want to do this. I don't want to do this. What happens in you in life is more important than what happens to you. Not wanting to die, I tried to get everything I could that I had learned that helped me achieve success in becoming a Green Beret. All my skills, my talents, my strengths. I said, okay, now I've got all these things that I've learned. Survival techniques, all these things. I'm going to use these to battle death. They didn't work. My plan, my vision was not what I thought it was going to be. I would pass out again. And I would realize then that, hey, I'm battling a big enemy here. I'm battling death. And it was scary when I realized that death was going to win. There's a verse in Ecclesiastes that says, Ecclesiastes 8:8 says, there is no man that has the power to retain his spirit. No man has the power to retain your spirit. Neither have you power in the day of death. And there's no discharge in that war. When I read that, I thought, wow, that's very true, because that's what I experienced. I learned that on that hospital bed. As much as I tried to retain my spirit, there was nothing I could do that was going to keep my spirit within me. My spirit was seeping out, and it was transporting itself to that thing we call death. And it scared me tremendously. In life, what happens in you is more important than what happens to you. What was happening in me? What was happening in me was I was having a crisis of confidence. Things that I had learned by experience that had always brought me success were not working anymore. Things that I thought were real, things that I thought were true, things that I thought were absolutes, unchangeable, that I could always depend on, weren't working. My plan was falling apart. So I was having a crisis of confidence in the things that I had believed in. I was having a crisis of confidence in me and in my ability to handle life. I was having a crisis of confidence in my ability to deal with life, but more importantly, to deal with death. What was happening in me was that myself was dying, and I began to realize that I needed more than I had. What was happening in me was that I was losing faith in myself. Prior to this, my faith had been in me and what I could do. But face to face with death, I lost faith in me. It wasn't making it. Life is going to test you the same way. If it hasn't already, it will. There'll come a time when things will happen and everything you believe in, everything that you have trusted, everything that has brought you success is going to be challenged, and it may fail you. Some of your beliefs about God may be challenged. But you know what? Your beliefs about God might change. God's not going to change. But what you believe about Him will change. His love and His grace are unfailing forever and ever. But some of the beliefs about what I think God would do and would not do in my own life, those are going to change. But God's not going to change. What was happening in me? I was learning that I am not all sufficient. I was learning the reality of my own inability to handle life and to handle death on my own. I was learning that I needed something greater than myself. I needed something outside of myself. But that whole process was very, very confusing to me. My life was, when I lost all my supports, when I lost everything I believed in, my life was now in a state of chaos. And it was worse than just pulling up to a Marriott sign and expecting the Marriott hotel. You know, having everything you believed in is chaos when you lose it. And that leads me to that third sign. Have you reached a point in your life where it just seems like everything is chaos? There's no meaning to this. I don't understand it. God, I can't believe that you would let this happen to me. Here's the third sign. Gary, in life, be reverent with what you don't understand. Be reverent with what you don't understand. I'm not asking you to understand everything about what I will do with you, Gary. But I am asking you to trust me. And trust that my purposes will be fulfilled in all that will happen to you. Because what's happening in you is more important than what's happening to you. And I want my purposes to be fulfilled in your life, Gary. You see, I didn't understand why I was going through all that. I was 24 years old. I was a Green Beret. I was a good guy. You know, I'm invincible. I'm immortal. Why am I dying? Well, in the midst of that chaos, and in the midst of one of those moments when I was awake, there was a man who had been walking around, and he came walking up to my bed. And I seemed like a nice guy. I'd seen him around earlier. And he said, "Hey, I'm glad to see you're awake, son." I said, "Sir, I'm glad to be awake. It's better than the option, you know." And he said, "I've been praying for you every day that I've been here. Most of the time you're not awake, you're unconscious, but I've been praying for you. Would you like to pray?" Pray? Are you kidding? Do you know what I've seen? Do you know the death, the pain? You want me to pray to a God who could let all those things happen? What are you, nuts? How could there be a God? I've just been through a war, and you want me to pray to a God who could allow something like that? That could have been my response. But it wasn't. It wasn't. He said, "Son, do you want to pray?" My response was, "Sir, I don't know how to pray." And he said, "That's okay, son. God knows how to listen. Be reverent with what you don't understand. Look to God. Take everything that you don't understand and in a simple prayer." I didn't know how to pray. I didn't even really know who I was praying to. I just had a simple prayer. "God, if you are real, I need you." That's all I prayed. And something happened. I wasn't miraculously healed. I still had many, many years of pain. Still had many, many years of nightmares and hurt. But something happened to me. God worked. Because all of a sudden, a miracle happened in here and in here. All of a sudden, I realized that there was something greater than me. All of a sudden, I realized that there was something outside of myself who was greater than me, greater than my need, greater than my pain, greater than my fear of death, greater than death itself. But more importantly, I learned that he knew me because he was able to touch my heart and touch my mind and calm me and give me a peace so that I would know that it's going to be okay. Nahum 1:3 is a verse, a very favorite verse of mine that says that God has his way in the whirlwinds and in the storms, and the clouds are the dust of his feet. I've gone through a lot of clouds over the years since then, but I've never, ever, ever doubted that he is not with me, because I've learned that the clouds of my storms are just the dust of his feet. I was changed. My life had a new meaning. I knew that there was a God now, and that this God loved me. But that's not the end of the story. You see, knowing that there's a God is different than knowing God. I began a 2-year search with a lot of motivation, a lot of excitement, because could you imagine what it's like to find out all of a sudden that there's a God that's real? I often think, if somebody told me that there was $1 million over here, or over here is God, which one am I going to go to? And with which, how much excitement? I left that hospital bed with an excitement that I know God. I've got to find him. And so I started to search for him. 2 years later, a friend, when we were talking about Vietnam and my experiences and my experience in the hospital bed, he kind of just smiled and he said, "Gary, do me a favor." I said, "Sure, Buck." He said, "If you value our friendship, Do me a favor. Read this. He gave me a New Testament. So I started reading it. After a couple of days, I came back to him and I said, Buck, what kind of book is this? I said, it's the same story, three different times, four different times. He goes, those are called the Gospels, Gary. Just keep reading. Those are the Gospels. Just keep reading. Just keep reading. So I kept reading. Because there were little bits of things that were reading that I was reading that was meaning something to me. By the time I got to John 14, let not your heart be troubled, Gary. So I found my name there. Do you know your name? It was right there, Gary. Let not your heart be troubled, Gary. You believe in God? Yes, I do. I met him in a hospital bed. Believe also in me. I am the way, the truth, and the life, Gary. No man cometh to the Father but by me. In verse 9, he says, as the Father has loved me, so have I loved you, Gary. In verse 15, he said, Gary, you're my friend. And then verse 16, he says, I've ordained you, Gary. I have a plan for you if you'll follow me. July 2nd, 1972, I knelt down in a camper, 2 o'clock in the morning. I prayed to accept Christ as my Savior. It took me a year, but in September of 1973, I said, God, I think I know what you want me to do. I think what you want me to do is give everything that I have, all of who I am, and just give it to you. Isn't that what you want, God? You want me to serve you. Just give everything that about me to you. So I'm going to do that, God. All that I am is now yours. And I entered a seminary to start to study and get to know him better. That was September of 1973. October of 73, 30 days later, I got a phone call saying I was being awarded the Medal of Honor. 30 days after I said, God, I will serve you no matter what. He said, okay, here's something to help you. You're being awarded the Medal of Honor. Not because of anything that I had done. It's for his honor. And that's been my journey. For his honor. I don't know where you are on your life's journey, but I do know that there's a way that seems right, but the end is death. So I hope you will heed the little signs that are placed there. Be careful. In life, sometimes things aren't as they seem. Sometimes life may be so bad that you think there couldn't be a God. Or sometimes life may be so good that you don't think you need a God. Both of them are lies. Greater is he that is in you than he that is in the world. Life is not as it seems, no matter what life puts in your path. As you travel, what happens in you is much more important than what's happening to you. Because what's happening in you is you're being changed. You're being conformed into the image of Christ. God is making you into a child of His. It's painful. It's painful. But don't let life consume you. When we found out that Lolly had cancer, we sat on the couch and cried. But we said we could either be consumed by this, or we can be changed and conformed if we put ourselves in God's hands. What happens in you is more important than what's happening to you. And then the third sign, when you come across those crazy, crazy times when you don't know what's happening, be reverent with what you don't understand. Look to God. He has a plan. He has a purpose. And He is unchanging in His love and in His faithfulness to you. I also know that God does have a plan. And I know that no matter how successful you are, you will never achieve significance or success in life until you have a relationship with Christ. Jeremiah has told us that let not the wise man glory in his wisdom, or the mighty man in his might, or the rich man in his riches. But if you're going to glory, glory in this, that you know Christ. I also know that each day God sets before us opportunities to get to know him better. Deuteronomy 30 tells us that I have set before you this day life and death. Life and death, Gary. Every moment of every day that's set before you on your journey. And God is there encouraging me, sometimes pleading to me, Gary, choose life. Choose life. Because I also know that no matter where you are in your journey, none of us are where God wants us to end up yet. None of us are as close to God as God wants us to be. He always wants us to come closer and closer and closer. It's my prayer that maybe these signs will aid you in your journey. Because I know life can be very, very deceiving. I know that some terrible things can happen that threaten to consume us. But I also know that if we look to him, he is faithful. I know that the clouds of my storms are the dust of his feet, that he will never leave me nor forsake me. Would you pray with me in closing before Pastor comes up?